Welcome to Enclave On Air. I'm your host today, Jessica Herger. Enclave On Air is a podcast from Enclave, which provides oncology professionals with the resources and information they need to provide the best patient care. In both digital and print formats, Enclave covers every angle of oncology practice, from new technology to treatment advances to important regulatory decisions. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Michael Wong, MD, a professor in the Department of Lymphoma Myeloma, Director of the Mantle Cell Lymphoma Program of Excellence, and a professor in the Department of Stem Cell Transplantation and Cellular Therapy in the Division of Cancer Medicine at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center, to provide perspective on the evolution of ibrutinib's use in the management of mantle cell lymphoma since its approval in 2013, as well as recent data from the 2021 ASH Annual Meeting and Exposition with the BTK inhibitor. For example, findings from the Phase 2 Window 2 trial were presented during the virtual meeting. The results demonstrated that chemotherapy-free induction with the combination of ibrutinib, rituximab, and venetoclax induced deep and durable responses in younger patients with mantle cell lymphoma, suggesting that patients with low-risk disease do not require chemotherapy. Wong also touched on several emerging areas of study in mantle cell lymphoma, including novel BTK inhibitors beyond ibrutinib, antibody-drug conjugates, and CAR T-cell therapies. In our exclusive interview, Wong discussed the clinical experience with ibrutinib in mantle cell lymphoma, its present role in the management of mantle cell lymphoma, and ongoing research that may affect its use as a single agent. Thank you so much, Dr. Wong, for taking the time to speak with us for this episode of Enclave On Air. It's a pleasure to have you.
Thank you very much. Hello, everybody. My name is Michael Wong. I'm the Putin Clark Endowed Professor in the Department of Lymphoma Myeloma at MD Anderson Cancer Center. I'm very glad to discuss with you about ibrutinib after ASH 2021.
BTK inhibitors have really changed the treatment landscape of patients with mantle cell lymphoma, and ibrutinib, of course, being the first one to come into the paradigm. So now with 7+ years of experience, how have you seen the utility of that agent in clinical practice change? What has really been learned about toxicity management with ibrutinib?
Ibrutinib was approved for the relapsed mantle cell lymphoma in November of 2013. We really have been, like you said, we really have been using it for many years. And for me, I used the agent 2 or 3 years before it was approved. Therefore, I probably used it for about 10 years. I also studied this agent and other agents in my laboratory, especially about the mechanism of resistance caused by ibrutinib and other BTK inhibitors. So I think the utility of this drug is further increasing, the reason being that we have many clinical trials using ibrutinib in mantle cell lymphoma. To not only we have studied ibrutinib in relapsed mantle cell lymphoma, we have used it in many combinations in the relapse setting. We combined ibrutinib with rituximab, we combined ibrutinib venetoclax, a BCL2 inhibitor, and the venetoclax ibrutinib combination has been published by Dr. Kong Tam from Australia in the New England Journal of Medicine. And this combination is being studied in an international phase 3 clinical trial. So there's many other combinations that was studied using ibrutinib. Not only we're using ibrutinib in the relapse setting and in the combination in the relapse setting, we're also using it in the frontline therapy. For example, the frontline therapy in the past, we always, with a young patient to diagnose the mantle cell lymphoma, we always use the intensive chemotherapies in order to reduce the chemotherapy and move away from chemotherapy, try to towards the direction of chemo-free combinations. Our site did a window one clinical trial. The window one clinical trial is ibrutinib rituximab until CR followed by 4 cycles chemotherapy. This is already listed as one of the options in the NCCN guideline, and is also being published in press in the Journal of Lancet Oncology. At this ASH 2021, I presented in the poster session on the window 2 clinical trial. Also, a window 2 is, in my opinion, is the improved version of window 1. In window 2, instead of just using ibrutinib and rituximab in the first part of the window of opportunity period, we also added venetoclax. So after ibrutinib, venetoclax, rituximab caused a complete remission in 92% of the time. Instead of going straight to four cycles of chemotherapy, we have a risk stratified approach this time. With the highest risk, we still have to give four cycles of chemotherapy. And with the lowest risk, without any chemotherapy, just chemo-free therapy for the very young patients. This is really a huge advance in patients with a low risk mantle cell lymphoma, newly diagnosed in young people. And for the moderate risk in between, we use two cycles of therapy. The response is good. The efficacy and toxicity ratio profile is very favorable. So we hope that we can continuously incorporate more chemo-free therapies to replace or reduce chemotherapy in the front line. Everybody know that chemotherapy, once in the body, not only they have can get rid of a tumor, unfortunately, they can also cause another form of cancer to come later. And this second therapy-related cancer are usually very aggressive and lethal in most of the times. So I can see that even with the burst of other BTK inhibitors, ibrutinib, due to its accumulative data and longer follow-ups and our experience with this drug, we're using this agent more and more. Unfortunately, all the BTK inhibitors cause toxicities. The most dreaded toxicity is the infection, followed by atrial fibrillation, followed by bleeding, rash, arthralgia, and others. And ibrutinib actually is one of the agent that being extensively studied on these toxicities. For example, infections, ibrutinib could inhibit the off kinase activities, decrease the immunity, and therefore causing more, contributing more infections. When ibrutinib is used with the steroids, we have recurred reports about the fungal infections. Therefore, we need to be very careful when you put patient on long-term steroids in combination with ibrutinib. The infections could be detected early. For example, we know that early pneumonia is one of the most lethal infections with BTK inhibitors, and therefore we know how to prevent it. For example, when we have sinusitis, we have sinuses, and many of the, a big portion of the sinusitis turn into pneumonia. So in order to avoid pneumonia or prevent pneumonia, we will treat sinusitis very aggressively by cleaning the sinuses, correcting the infrastructure if something's abnormal, and try to start early antibiotics to wipe out the sinusitis to reduce the pneumonia episode. We also know how to treat other infections as early as possible. We also learned how to enhance the immunity of our patient using the IVIG, and this can help prevent infections. So the other toxicity which I dread the most is atrial fibrillation. Atrial fibrillation is present in the elderly population in 3 to 6%. However, with ibrutinib, it can rise in the among all the clinical trials with ibrutinib, atrial fibrillation could rise up to 12%. But we have learned how to use ibrutinib. For example, with the history of atrial fibrillation of patients, we try to avoid using ibrutinib. We actually use second generation BTK inhibitors, such as acalabrutinib and zanubrutinib. And of course, at this ASH, I presented another BTK inhibitor, which is a third generation called pirtobrutinib. It is a reversible, non-covalent inhibitor. So far, it has not caused any added atrial fibrillation on 600 some patients. Therefore, if the patient have a very heavy history of a cardiac history, dilated ventricles, history of atrial fibrillation, history of atrial arrhythmia, and history of hypertrophy, we try to use other agents rather than ibrutinib. That is my personal experience. The other things we learned about BTK inhibitors is that they're commonly the BTK inhibitors, they are all related to bleeding. They are like aspirin. The bleeding can be very common, up to 50%, but seldom it is severe unless the person have trauma. We have learned occasionally when the patient fall, they hit their head, there's intracranial bleeding, which led to very rarely, but had happened to a few patients that they actually died from intracranial hemorrhage. This is not true to all the covalent BTK inhibitors. Ibrutinib is one of them. So in order to avoid this, we have avoided using anticoagulation with warfarin, for example, is a black box warning. We absolutely avoid using it. Can be very careful when we use other coagulants. When there's an increased bleeding, we have to modify anticoagulation no matter what. We have to weigh the risks of either to withdraw or reduce ibrutinib or withdraw or reduce the anticoagulation. You know, the anticoagulation warfarin is an absolute contraindication, but other oral anticoagulations are often used together with ibrutinib. In my personal opinion, never use three things together: ibrutinib, anticoagulation, and aspirin. Never use the three of them together because there has been excessive bleeding. The next side effect is oftentimes BTK inhibitor occasionally causes a rash. And the rash can actually be easily managed by stopping the drug and waiting for the rash to disappear and resume the ibrutinib at the original dose. Occasionally, there's a bad rashes. You use a medical dose pack and it kills the rash. And sometimes this process could be repeated a couple of times. The rash will eventually resume. So there's many other side effects, but those are the main categories of covalent BTK caused side effects of toxicity.
We've also seen long-term follow-up data from a pooled analysis, including study 1104, evaluating ibrutinib in mantle cell lymphoma. What were some of the key findings from that analysis, and how do they impact clinical decisions?
The pooled analysis are the 370 mantle cell lymphoma patients in the relapse setting collected with a three clinical trial, one phase three clinical trial from Europe, another called the SPARK International, and the 1104, also an international trial. There's three international trials. So we had a series of reports on this pooled analysis. The first 3.5 years, then 5 years, and then most recently, we are working on the 10-year follow-up period, and I hope to share the manuscript with you soon, together with my colleagues. The pooled analysis, two of them so far at different time intervals, all releasing the same message. The message is, when you use ibrutinib as early as possible, the response rate is higher if you use it earlier and the toxicity is lower. So the 1104 study, the median prior lines of therapy are three. You can imagine lymphoma is such that every time you give a patient therapy, the response rate will further decrease because of buildup of drug resistance. For example, if an agent is used in the frontline, 90% response rate, and after the frontline relapse setting, you use it again, you use another therapy, you will become about 75 to 80%. And then in the third line, you will become 50 to 55%. And after three lines, the response rate is even dropped further. So when we are talking about the 1104 study, after three prior lines, the response rate was 68% published in the New England Journal of Medicine in November 2013. However, if in the pooled analysis, you see that if you use after two prior lines, the response is higher. If you use only after one prior line, the response is the highest. So what's the message translating the reality in our practice is when you have a good oral agent, use it as early as possible. Because always in my practice in lymphoma, not only applying only to ibrutinib, I use the best efficacy therapy with the least side effect early as possible. Why? Because when you use the best therapies early, the efficacy is the highest, the toxicity is the lowest, and the duration response is the longest. So think about this. This is a perfectly demonstrated in the pooled analysis with ibrutinib. So please use BTK inhibitors as early as possible. And our window one and window two clinical trials use the ibrutinib in the front line, first line. And also, Dr. Jane, my colleague, and I published an article 2021 in JCO, Journal for Clinical Oncology, combining with rituximab and ibrutinib in the elderly population at the first line, the response rate was 100%. So I hope we all learn from this pooled analysis how to use our best therapies early to avoid excessive toxicities and to prolong the duration of reaction.
What else are you looking forward to see emerge in the mantle cell lymphoma paradigm?
Besides ibrutinib in mantle cell lymphoma, there's much progress in mantle cell lymphoma. In fact, many people complain that they cannot keep up with the speed of the progresses. For example, we now have several classes of therapies for mantle cell lymphoma. We originally relied on chemotherapy. Then we developed targeted therapies such as ibrutinib, acalabrutinib, the new ibrutinib, and now pirtobrutinib. But those four drugs are all targeting on BTK, the Bruton's tyrosine kinase. We have also developed venetoclax is the BCL2 inhibitor, very effective either alone or in combination in mantle cell lymphoma. We've been working on other targeted therapy agents soon to come. We are studying targeted agents on AKT, on PI3 kinases, on many other targets. The third class of therapy for mantle cell lymphoma is immunotherapy. We used rituximab for many times. We now have obinutuzumab, another very effective anti-CD20 therapy. We are studying tofacitinib, the anti-CD19 antibody. We are not only using new antibodies, we are conjugating the antibody with antibody conjugates. In this ASH 2021, I presented zalovertinib vedotin, which is a monoclonal antibody against the ROR1 antigen on the surface of lymphoma cells, linked with the linker to a toxin called MMAE, very toxic. But when you combine with connected with the antibody you used in humans, the amount is tiny for the whole body, but it is adequate to kill the tumor cells. So the preliminary report on this clinical trial with the zalovertinib vedotin in relapsed mantle cell lymphoma was very promising with the overall response rate of 52%. Not only that, in the clinical trials, we are studying other antibody immunotoxins such as polatuzumab, the antibody immunoconjugate approved for large cell lymphoma. We also are finding its activity in mantle cell lymphoma. Of course, we are working with the bispecific antibodies such as mosunetuzumab, which is a bispecific antibody against the CD20 and CD3. We are working with another one of those called epcoritinib, also a bispecific antibody with the CD20, CD3. So the next class of therapy is CAR T cell therapy. CAR T cell therapy, the only approved therapy is brexucarpatogene autoleucel, approved in July of 2020 by FDA for relapsed mantle cell lymphoma patients. This has been widely used. In this ASH 2021, Dr. Yu-Tsai Wang from Mayo Clinic, on behalf of all our colleagues, including myself, presented the real-world experience with 107 patients with relapsed mantle cell lymphoma treated on commercial brexucarpatogene autoleucel. And they found the activity, efficacy, and toxicity are very similar with the ZUMA-2 original study published in the New England Journal of Medicine in 2020. So these are very encouraging results because not only we are doing well with the clinical trial patients, when we apply to real world, we are also getting the same efficacy and the toxicities. So we are very excited by this presentation. Of course, we are working on more CAR T cells. We are working on CD19 CAR T cell using the 4-1BB co-stimulatory molecule. This trial is almost complete with the enrollment, and we look forward for its data analysis in the future. And we are also aiming for other targets, and you are going to hear about it in the future. So the therapies for mantle cell lymphoma are very, very exciting, and they keep coming.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of Enclave on Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.enclave.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. Enclave is also on social media. On Twitter, follow us at Enclave and at EnclaveSOSS. On Facebook, like us at Enclave and Enclave State of the Science Summit, and follow our Enclave page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of Enclave on Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you are there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to Enclave on Air.